Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Gabriel Florimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you doing?
Good, Nicholas. How's it?
All right. Cold, but carrying on. And Mr. Marius Root. Marius, how are you? How is Benoni?
How's Nick? How's it, Gabriel? I'd like to quickly make a quick announcement. Our listeners may not be aware, but every time I suggest a topic, it's normally about cricket, and Nick always vetoes it. And I see yesterday cricket was spoken about, so I'm incredibly angry about that. So I would just like to say congratulations to the Proteas for winning yesterday and who won the Test Series in the West Indies 2-0, especially Keshav Maharaj, who got a hat-trick, which is the first hat-trick, or only the second hat-trick by South African ever in Test cricket, and the first since 1960. So I'd just like to say, well done to him. Yeah. So, I mean, the last time a South African got a hat-trick, Dwight Eisenhower was the president of the US, and Verwoerd was prime minister of South Africa, and we went to republic. Word. So it's quite interesting. So I'd just like to say that, and just like so our listeners are aware of the tyrannical grip Nick has on the show, even though he seems like a very pleasant chap. The very bear-like, fluffy bear-like exterior hides a very black and dark heart.
Yeah, Nicholas listens to Mongolian heavy metal. So let that be a warning to anyone who wants to cross it.
I'd just like to demonstrate to our listeners and watchers that my benevolence is so great that even this vicious slander will not be punished. But anyway, let us get into the news of today. And I'm sure this is why you clicked on the video. The great question, will Gauteng be put into level 5 lockdown again? There are some people now openly calling for this. The CEO of Netcare has called for it, saying he went on Bruce Whitfield's show on 7-0, on the Money Show, and he said that Gauteng hospitals are dealing with what he called a mass casualty situation, that the province is facing basically a humanitarian disaster, and that this is what he said, quote, "I'm afraid that these numbers are demonstrating that absent a level 5 lockdown in Gauteng, we may not see the end of the surge for some time." He also called for schools to be closed, saying that schools are transmitters of the virus. Yes, children themselves may not be that badly impacted by the illness, but they do pass it on to parents, caregivers, grandparents, and we think that that's problematic. Gauteng Premier David Makura said that the province might impose stricter COVID-19 regulations, but he didn't give many details on that. To try and stem the rise in cases. Apparently, in the last 24 hours, about 70% of all COVID-19 cases have been in Gauteng in the whole country. And there's a lot of concern now that Gauteng's hospitals are going to run out of space. It's, of course, made worse by the fact that one of them burned, half of it burned down and got closed recently, and that's Charlotte Maxeke Hospital. So, Gabriel, let me start with you. Firstly, is the situation with regards to COVID as bad as they are saying in Gauteng? And secondly, is a level 5 lockdown the answer?
Yeah, I think the situation is just about as bad as they're saying in Gauteng. If you look at hospital occupancies, ICUs, ventilators, and all that, Gauteng is in much worse place than it was during the peak of the last wave or the first wave. Of course, that's not to say that we're using all the resources that we have at our capacity. There was that 450 million rand hospital built by Anglo or something, which is completely empty. So there are measures to be taken short of lockdown that could relieve the stress on current South African, on current Gauteng hospitals. But I think it's worth just reminding people of the conceptual space, because a lot of people think, you know, you're either for lockdown always, as long as there's like 5 cases in Sydney, the whole country must shut down, or you're against it always and people must just always get along in whichever way they think best. The Institute's position was supportive of the first call for a hard lockdown for 3 weeks in March of 2020 on the basis that the evidence indicated that this pathogen is more dangerous than garden variety flus and colds, and significantly so, but that we're not sure exactly where it's going to land, how much it will cause death directly and how much it'll cause death by overwhelming hospital systems that mean then people can't be treated and you have to deal with triage. So 3 weeks seemed to make sense. And then with as soon as it is extended, in fact, before it is extended, we said you've got to end this now because new data has come in. So likewise, IRR CEO Frans Krenier and former IRR president Jonathan Janssen both supported school closures, even when that position started to become unpopular, because at the time, the best evidence seemed to indicate that children were pretty good at spreading the virus. Subsequent evidence coming in the last 6 months has suggested that the extent to which that's true was overstated at first. So at this point, based on the papers that I've read, don't think that closing schools on a cost-benefit analysis is going to help in terms of the children. If there is an argument to do it, it's because of all the teachers that have to travel around and the strain on South Africa's logistics system. And South Africa's logistics system is really the problem. A hard lockdown, I mean, level 4 lockdown last year, and even some of level 5. During level 5 lockdown, I drove around Hillbrow and Yeovil and Durnfontein and the Johannesburg CBD and Jeppe Street. And I'll show you the footage. There was just, you know, clogged streets and full on taxis. Just chock-a-block full taxis, even when it was supposed to be 80%. And 80% is kind of a little bit ridiculous. I think short of dealing with the logistics situation, which would mean forcing all taxi businesses to operate on a sort of legitimate basis where they're paying taxes so that in the future they pay back for the money that they're going to get now for free to subsidize them so that they go at half capacity. Short of doing that, which is not going to happen, we've shown that we're too weak to do that. I'm not sure that you really can amend the situation by a hard lockdown. But if ever there was an argument to be made for a hard lockdown, it's now. And to say one last thing, and I know I'm rambling on, but this is sort of a very complicated issue. And that's that I have spoken a lot about herd protection. The best scientists in South Africa estimated that a quarter of the country was infected by the end of the first wave, that at least half the country was infected by the end of the second wave. And that, I think, is part of the reason that outside of Gauteng, everywhere else is experiencing a very low wave. It's a kind of dribble, even though on the Google data evidence, on the sort of anecdotal evidence of what people are reporting, it doesn't seem like behavior is particularly disciplined, like social distancing is happening a hell of a lot. People are more or less getting along with their lives, and yet the infection rate's not that high. In Gauteng, the situation was always different because you have a lot of middle-class people who had the wealth, the laptop-based jobs to be able to work remotely. And complacency in that sector has set in. People who didn't know anyone that had COVID that was particularly close to them. 12 of my friends have been infected in the last couple of weeks because they went to two parties and sort of everyone hugged everyone and smushed all over each other. And then they all got sick. I think Marius has a similar story to tell about complacency. So, yeah, okay, hard lockdown. If it was ever going to be a smart thing to do, it would be a smart thing to do in Gauteng right now. Will it really work? I'm not sure. I think that we're kind of just in a desperately sad situation, and the best we can do is open up the hospital capacity that we have, and that in the meanwhile, people do their due diligence in a personal capacity.
So, Marius, before the show, you gave a bit of a not safe for family ears rant about complacency of a certain type, and I don't know if you want to maybe give an edited version of that.
I have a neighbor, he's a young chap, he's about 20, and he works at the kind of engine garage shop around the corner from our house. He was apparently in contact with somebody with COVID a couple of days ago. He didn't go for a test immediately. I think he was in contact with the person over the weekend, only went for a test late yesterday afternoon. Anyway, he still went to his, after he'd been in contact with the person with COVID, he still went to his job. I actually sent him WhatsApp. I said he's extremely irresponsible to do that. And it turns out he actually does have COVID now. So he's probably going to be fine, and his girlfriend and his little baby that live there are probably all going to be fine. They're probably not going to get particularly ill from COVID. But they could pass it on. And I mean, as I say, this guy works in he's either the I think he's the trainee manager at this engine garage shop. I mean, so this is obviously a place where people, it's not a place where you sit behind a computer all day and you don't see anybody. He's seeing people every day. He's got his colleagues that he works with that see people every day. The people are coming and going all the time at the shop. So, and he's touching people's money, touching people's, the things that they're buying, their chips or chocolates or cigarettes, or whatever the case is. You know, so, I mean, as I said to you guys in the show beforehand, I mean, I'm no fan of the hard lockdown, and I think it's a terrible thing that people get forced to stay in their homes. But, you know, if you're acting so responsibly, perhaps you should actually be locked in your home. I mean, I don't think South Africa or Gauteng should go into a level 5 lockdown, but it's up to all of us to be responsible. If you are feeling sick, you have been in contact with somebody with COVID, don't go to your job at a shop where you see people all day. It's not hard, you know, or sanitize or whatever the case is. You know, it's this, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but this is in our hands and the government's not going to save us. I mean, we were told that the lockdown was so that we'd get ready for these various waves of COVID, which obviously hasn't happened. I mean, we've got as Gabriel said, we've got a hospital standing empty. We've got Charlie Makeke, which half of it burned down and standing empty. So, part of the reason we're having this huge issue now and running out of beds is simply, again, government's incompetence. And another issue is looking at members around our vaccine rollout. Mark Schussler, who's probably a lot of our listeners are and viewers will be familiar with, he's quite a well-known South African economist. He put together a chart on Twitter which said COVID-19 vaccination doses administered per 100 people. South Africa's at 3.6. Upper middle income countries, which South Africa is generally considered part of, are at 50. So they are, what's that, factor of 14 better than us. Lower middle income countries that are much poorer than us, they vaccinated 12 people per 100. So we are doing worse than just about every single country on earth. And we actually have no excuse. I mean, in the broader scheme of things, South Africa is not a particularly poor country. We've got skills and we should have the capability to be doing out a fairly comprehensive vaccination scheme. And whatever your view is on vaccines, it does seem that vaccine rollouts do see a corresponding drop in COVID infections. So a lot of what's happening, I mean, this COVID, this third wave in Gauteng, it's partly, as Gabriel also mentioned, you know, complacency amongst people. But I think where the real blame should be laid at is the door of the government. We've been in some form of lockdown now for something approaching 500 days, and the government has really not used their time well at all. And we've seen, I mean, we can go on about the corruption, the PPE corruption, digital vibes and what have you. The government has really actually dropped the ball badly. Some people tell you the South African government response was excellent, but I think if you think that, then I've also got a bridge to sell you and some magic beans.
Yeah.
No, I just want to add in terms of digital vibe. So South Africa is not a particularly poor country, but its government is astonishingly greedy. So the big news of the day or of the week is that Emmanuel Macron, the French president, and Cyril Ramaphosa did like a little foot tickle with each other, and South Africa is going to produce vaccines in South Africa, and isn't it amazing? This is really the point, right? The vaccine program in South Africa is not about actually giving people who want vaccines the option to get them. It's about the South African government making a bit of money and, you know, creating 5.5 jobs.
Some of them South African government, people linked to the South African government, not the actual
people linked to the South African government getting some tenders and us getting the prestige of being like the first African country to be producing vaccines. Isn't that amazing? I mean, if you want to talk about sort of monopoly capital, greed, thievery, you know, all of those pugnacious social justice warriors who worry about profiteers getting in the way of saving lives and livelihoods should really look at the union buildings. It is amazing to me that so clearly the mission has been to get this prestige and get a little bit of profit rather than save lives and livelihoods. And if you missed it, the Report newspaper uncovered emails showing that the Command Council had 15 million free vaccines, Sputnik V, which is the most traditional, like if you're worried about mRNA vaccines, like Sputnik V is like just the most, was at the time the most widely tested, traditional, old-fashioned, useful vaccine for stopping people from dying. And we said no to 15 million free vaccines in February that would have been distributed between March and May. Why? So that we could produce, like, I don't know, 500,000 here in Benoni and brag about it, or wherever that thing is going to be put. It's very frustrating. And I just want to sort of underline that point, that the mission of the government, and this is why, this is partly why I think lockdown is a bad idea right now. The data just shows that nothing is working the way it's supposed to work. Lockdown was supposed to curb the disease, but if you look at the waves and you look at the lockdown levels, there's just no evidence to suggest that lockdown actually worked last time. In fact, there's some evidence to suggest that lockdown made things worse. So I really don't think that in our country, in other countries, I think lockdowns can work. But in our country, I'm not sure that it can, because it's being run by people whose idea of a lockdown is to fill taxis and empty, safe hygienic workspaces that can actually be managed.
And parks.
And parks and beaches, yeah, and stop you from wearing bikinis. So I think that I just really think that people must know now is the winter of our discontent. If you're in Gauteng, if you're anywhere else, you're probably fine. But if you're in Gauteng, it's a good time to buckle up.
And also, yeah, we must ask the sacrifice of civil liberties. I mean, is it worth it? Some will say yes, but we just need to ask, for example, the families of, for example, Collins Khoza or Petrus Michels, you know, who got beaten to death for breaking lockdown regulations. I mean, Collins Khoza wasn't actually even breaking lockdown regulations.
And they weren't even.
Exactly. And now, and the army is apparently being put out in the, being deployed in Gauteng again to do what? I'm not sure. To beat people, to make them do frog jumps or do push-ups when they're breaking lockdown regulations, which was also, obviously being forced to do a frog jump by a soldier is a lot different from being beaten to death by one. But they still have no authority over any South African citizen to make them do, you know, PT for breaking lockdown regulation. And that was what, I think I've said this before, just one of the things that was, one of the most upsetting things for me last year when the lockdown started. So many people sharing photos of South African citizens being forced to do these humiliating exercises in front of soldiers saying, yes, this is it, this is what we need to do. No, that's not it. You, fine, we're under lockdown, go home, it's fine. But you don't make people do frog jumps and star jumps and push-ups in the street to some form of humiliation because you were outside of your house. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, so to me, it really seems like the repeated failures of the state, it's sort of, they feel like they need to do something now, and then it's, oh, okay, well, we'll just make the citizens suffer more because of our failures. And it's just not good enough, especially considering that the evidence shows that it's really not that helpful.
But, one thing I'd like to mention, apparently the acting Minister of Health is considering opening the vaccine registration to over 40s, which I think will probably be quite a good thing, and we'll start seeing perhaps more people get vaccinated. Maybe we'll see this vaccine rollout start accelerating, but who knows? That could also be completely wishful thinking, and I might have just need to go buy a whole bunch of straws so I can clutch at them.
All right, let's move on because we have gone long on this one. So I don't know how long we'll have to cover this, but let's just kick it off. So of course, we've been running this campaign as Gabriel has talked about before on the show of saying that racism is not the problem in South Africa. It's a problem, but it's not the problem, and pointing to various bits of evidence as to why that's true, and also why most South Africans actually agree with us. Our CEO Frans Cronier wrote a letter or an article to one of the media houses recently discussing this, and it has prompted a response from a man called David Mayamela, who has written that racism is alive and well in South Africa, a response to Frans Cronier. So he goes off basically by first attacking the thing as racist, and I think that that's criticism that we can pretty much put to bed from the start. But Gabriel, you were amused by some of the critiques this thing made. What were your thoughts on it, and what did it try to say?
Yeah, I mean, so he says racism is alive and well, and then defines the institutes as racist, and defines the message that, like, it's worth relying on science as racist, and then defines the sort of progress that we've made that means it's now the case that 4 out of 5 South Africans say that they haven't experienced any racism at all in the last 5 years. He defines that as racist because he says in his concluding remarks that it's designed to make black people look like fools, !! So, you know, if racism equals non-racialism, then it is alive and well. If racism equals, like, most people see that racism is not the problem, then racism is very alive and well. This guy sort of is a clear race hustler. He runs a little think tank that, I don't know, auctions off accounts of what it's like to be black based on his personal experience, and that has no data that he's even trying to appeal to back it up. He's someone who got the Mandela Rhodes Scholarship, which is great because Mandela, who was an IRR scholar, you know, pinned his name to Rhodes because he saw there's a positive legacy to colonialism. Even though Rhodes was generally quite a bad guy, you know, at least he left lots of money for people in the future to go to university. And David, you know, advertises himself as, you know, you can tell the Institute's a terrible place because it once was home to Helen Ziller, who said that colonialism had not only a negative legacy. So he hasn't figured out his own life beyond the thought that everyone who doesn't like him because he's black, and that he speaks for all black people. And I think that's terribly insulting.
Yeah, can't say it much better than that. Marius, can you say it any better than that?
Well, I don't think so. Gabriel's always a hard act to follow, even when he doesn't make sense. But I think this guy's probably outsourced a lot of his thinking to Twitter. I mean, he just, repeats the same old tropes. I mean, he says, blah, blah, blah. And that is why the Democratic Alliance, for instance, has reached the ceiling in terms of electoral support in the black community. I mean, we always hear every year that the DA has reached the ceiling of black support, and they always tend to surprise us often. And what we saw in the last round of by-elections, which was actually the DA had some bad results, but particularly in what you'd call colored majority areas. But what there does seem to be some trends that the DA supports in black wards, for want of a better name, has actually held up fairly well in the wards where it did run. There were quite a few wards where the by-elections where the DA failed to or declined to put forward a candidate. But it seems that the DA support seems to be holding up in those kinds of places. And I think we've mentioned on the show before, it would be quite a blow to the narrative if the DA sees an increase in its support in the October election. And the increase in support comes from black South Africans while losing support from colored and white Afrikaner voters. So that'd be quite something. But I mean, this guy, David Malimela, makes also the same mistake as others have made. Nobody's saying that racism is not a problem. Of course, racism is a problem. It's a terrible thing.
France's piece starts out by saying that South Africa is racist in three regards: its policy, its history, and the sort of elites that are trying to run it into the ground by, you know, ramifying race baiting techniques. Exactly. And then my response is, well, these guys are saying there's no racism at all, and it's never existed, and history never happened, and the only thing that you should remember is the Nazis. I mean, it's a very confused.
Exactly. I mean, and racism, like, nobody says it's not a problem. Racism is a terrible thing. It destroys people's dignity. You know, it's a very hurtful thing, but it is not the main problem facing South Africa today. We don't have to rehash it there. We've gone on about the show many times what the major problems are facing South Africa. But just, I mean, I just want to point out two more things what Dave Mayamela said. One of his lines is, white racist and racist discourse emboldened in South Africa today. He's living in a different South Africa from the one I am, because when people say silly racist things such as Vicky Momberg or Adam Katsavelos, they either end up in jail or their lives are basically destroyed. So I'm not sure who's feeling pretty emboldened by that. And then he also goes on to talk about the recent Burger King acquisition, which was declined by the Competition Commission because the purchaser wasn't black South African enough, because apparently that the African Development Bank was apparently a shareholder. So what he says, so maybe, for the record,
carry on, Morris.
So he just says that, for the record, the Competition Commission regulates for an inclusive economy wherein racial exclusion must be a thing of the past. Anyone who wants to do business in South Africa must observe the laws of the land. Burger King is no exception. But as we were saying before the show, this has actually destroyed value for black shareholders, and it actually treats black people as children, saying, you aren't grown up enough to know what to do with your own money. We will say who you can sell it to. And now, knows?
Maybe the real problem here is that racism is alive and well, and it's perpetuated by BEE telling black people that they can't sell their property.
Exactly. And the current company that owns Burger King is apparently lots of financial pressure, and probably if this sale doesn't go through, I believe it's going to be appealed. Probably a lot of people, and the vast majority, I'm sure, of our black people are going to lose their jobs. So, I mean, can you tell me how that is inclusive or adds to economic growth? It's quite ridiculous.
Yeah, I just want to jump in there and say that the reason I don't talk about BEE as being racist is because I think that can tempt people into thinking that it's popular. You know, you have this thought because BEE is the law of the land. I think race-based policy and racism are different. I think that BEE is not very popular. Our polling shows that as well. And that's the next thing that we'll be talking about later in the week.
But we've even, I mean, you can go back to 10 to 15 years ago. The higher people in the ANC have been saying for years, this is not a new thing, that BEE is not working. I believe Gwede Mantashe himself has said it wasn't working. I think Pravin Gordhan said it. Other people, who are not necessarily ANC people, but opinion leaders like Moletsi Mbeki, the former president's brother, has also said it's not working. So this is obviously not – people who are saying BEs aren't working are not reluctant whites. Lots of people are people who are actually in part of the establishment and who are saying this isn't working. But for whatever reason, I think ideology is – you know, that ideology is meeting reality again, but at the moment, ideology is winning, I think.
Yeah, I'm also confused as to why David Maimela did not criticize David Makura recently suggesting a very similar thing, that racism is in fact not the problem in South Africa. Gabriel, what exactly did he say in a tweet again?
He said we mustn't make every issue about race because that's not the thing behind every problem that we have. And
David Mabuza, not David Makura.
Sorry, yeah. David Mabuza, yes, apologies.
Deputy President.
But David Makura, you see David Makura more out and about than David Mabuza. He's like kind of the Easter Bunny now, Dave Mabuza.
Yeah. But yeah, it's actually amazing to me how poor so many of the responses are to our arguments. I mean, the first half of the thing, he basically spends his time attacking the Institute's polling and saying that France, in a word limited piece, doesn't go in depth into the precise methodology of the polling, which is. You know, you can go look it up. We've talked about it before, and it is
representative. And written about it, and it's tweeted right there on Racism is Not the Problem's Twitter page and the IRR's Twitter page. Demographically representative sample, which means 80% of the respondents are black, and 10% are white, and 10% are colored, and 5% are Indian. And I'm just rounding to the nearest five.
And if you break down the actual, if you go and look at the report itself, it also breaks it down by race. So you can see, what specifically black respondents said.
You can see, for example, that black respondents, 80% of black respondents said they haven't experienced any racism in the last 5 years, versus only 60% of white respondents and 70% of Indian respondents. So there's food for thought about that. My favorite little factoid that I'll drop here, which we haven't released yet, is that we asked people, do you think you're more likely to benefit from a decentralized form of government redistribution called a voucher system or from more BEE? And the proportion of white people who said no, they'd benefit more from BEE is twice as high as the proportion from black people.
if anyone ever tells you that South Africa is a very simple place, that it's easy to work out what's going on here, They don't know anything about South Africa.
They're not paying attention. You also have, it's a wonderful thing. I think it's kind of wonderful that 10% of white people think that only black people should get jobs. I mean, forever.
Exactly.
We asked that question and like a higher, anyway.
Yeah, no, so go, if you don't believe us, go check out our polling. It's on our website, irr.org.today. You can have a look there and see for yourself what we say, what the methodology is, all that kind of stuff. And if you disagree with us, perhaps you can write a better quality response than we've received so far, because so far the critiques have not been particularly strong. But we put that challenge out there to you. But that's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening. I hope that you enjoyed the show. If you want to support the IRR and our campaigns, you can SMS your name to 32823, and we will call you back to sign you up as a friend of the Institute, which means giving a small donation of like 100 Rand or less per month to fund our activities. Anyway, thank you very much, and we hope you have a wonderful day. Cheers, everyone.